Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we start with new polls from Quinnipiac University. They're looking at four states, and we're looking at the Senate side of things: Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. All four of those states have incumbent Republicans. All four of those Republicans have very competitive challengers. Some are closer than we would like them to be. But in a couple of these states, we really hope that these numbers are accurate and looking at the way these races are trending, particularly Pennsylvania. So let's start there. Pat Toomey has been in a very tight race with Democrat Katie McGinty. Some of the polls have him down. Some even have him below 40. But in this one, it's Toomey 50, McGinty 42. We've documented pretty well Rob Portman blowing out Ted Strickland in Ohio. That's still the case in this poll, 55 to 38. Dead heat in North Carolina, though, with Ross, the Democrat, tied with Richard Burr, the incumbent Republican, 46-46. The governor's race there is also within the margin of error. And in Florida, while Rubio's still ahead against Patrick Murphy, it's only 4 points now, had been seven in the last Quinnipiac poll, so it's 48-44 there, and that's getting dangerously close to the margin of error. So we kind of thought that one might be in the back pocket, maybe not so much right now. But Jim, obviously Republicans playing a lot of defense, and if these numbers are close to accurate, and we'll find out in about 5 weeks, obviously that goes a long way towards keeping that majority.
Yeah, the reason this is a good martini is because the Senate Republicans who are running for re-election this year, in most of these cases, they are running significantly stronger than Donald Trump. And that's good. It looks like they're going to have to, because the chances of Trump sweeping those states are pretty minimal. And in fact, it's conceivable he could lose all of them. Another kind of good example of this, it wasn't on our list, but Emerson has some new polling out this morning. They have Marco Rubio ahead of Murphy by 8 points, so kind of back within that margin we'd seen in most of the previous polling. But kind of an indicator of just how different you could, just how big a split you could end up seeing between Trump and Republican Senate candidates. In Arizona, John McCain, in longtime incumbent, everybody expects he's going to win. The question is, what kind of a margin? Well, Emerson finds John McCain up by 16 points. Greg, in the presidential race, a four-way race, Emerson finds Hillary Clinton at 44%, Donald Trump at 42%. Now, I'd be surprised if Arizona actually went blue this year. I think if it does, it's a, kind of minor catastrophe for Republicans. But it indicates, that the Senate Republicanism, which we were told was old and tired and establishment and all that stuff. No. That stuff is doing fine this year. It's winning just great. It's the Trump philosophy and style and everything that's having weaknesses. And we'll see how it shakes out. But good old-fashioned Republicanism is still doing reasonably well in a lot of these key states.
Looking at some of the breakdowns here among the demographics in these polls, Rubio up by 11 points among independents, but down 19 points among women. I thought that was kind of surprising. He's up almost 2-1 among men. In North Carolina, Richard Burr is up 7 among independents, but he's down 10 points among women. And in Ohio, Ted Strickland, other than among Democrats, he's just blistering Ted Strickland across the board. He's even up 4 among women there. And Pat Toomey, interestingly, gets 21% of the Democratic vote in Pennsylvania, which is even better than Ted Strickland's doing in Ohio. So fascinating numbers along the way. We'll see how accurate those turn out to be. All right, on to the second martini now. And we would say this is probably also good, but other people could have different opinions here. This is courtesy of Jim Today in the Morning Jolt. Everyone associated with the National Football League has to be worried about this. Quote, "One of the current parlor games playing out in sports media executive suites is why the NFL's television ratings have dramatically fallen through the first 4 weeks of the season. Most notably, each of the league's primetime showcases, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, and Thursday Night Football, are down double-digit percentage drops in viewers. In a particularly troubling trend, ratings for Monday Night Football were down 19% prior to Monday's Giants-Vikings game, including the lowest ever viewership in the history of the series, when just over 8 million viewers watched the Saints-Falcons game. That was going head-to-head with the first Trump-Clinton debate. But the Giants-Vikings drew just a 9.1 overnight rating on Monday, which was the highest Monday Night Football overnight of the year. That's the good news. The bad news, it was down 8% from the 9.9 for last year's Week 4 matchup between the Seahawks and Lions that, oh, by the way, did not feature a New York market. Sunday Night Football also down. They're trying to blame it on a Steelers blowout of the Chiefs on Sunday night. And, Jim, as you very accurately point out in the Jolt, Thursday Night Football is just a horrific product that nobody wants to be involved with on the field because it's just too soon after the previous game, week after week, for these guys to have recovered physically from the beating they took the past Sunday. But as you also point out, 32% of Americans are less likely to watch because of all the political grandstanding being done by Colin Kaepernick and all his copycats and their mistreatment of the national anthem. A much smaller percentage are more inclined to watch because of that. So it could just be people are not as impressed with the product, and it could also be that people just don't want politics with their sports.
I think anybody who tries to oversimplify this to having only one cause is being disingenuous. But I think it's very hard. I don't think you can say, oh, Kaepernick is having no effect. And when people said, hey, they were really upset about what he was doing, whether they agreed with him or disagreed with him, or the people of my perspective, like, just want to enjoy watching the game, stop injecting politics into my football, stop bringing social activism into this. I don't care what you think, Colin Kaepernick. I want you to stand for the anthem, and I want you to sit on that bench like you're supposed to, because you're not starting. To Blaine Gabbert, the powerhouse that he is. And I, you know, people said, oh, you know, NFL fans, you know, they're never going to boycott. They're never going to turn away. This league is unstoppable. Everybody loves football. Nobody's going to change their habits. Look, some people did. And some people do this because of Kaepernick and the protests. I think it's safe to say at least some of that is it. I think of the everything else I point out. I think if you're opposed to Kaepernick and you're really offended by him, you shouldn't overstate it. This is not like the viewership has gone down in half. But when it goes down double digits, the league notices. And I understand that they have to give back certain commercial time if they don't reach a certain audience size. Now, the other popular theory floating around is people saying, it's a crazy election year. People are really invested in it. You know, the cable news networks are having huge ratings. Some of that is coming out of the sports audience. That could be the case. If that's the case, then after the first week in November, the ratings for the NFL game should jump back up again. Color me a little skeptical of that theory. I have this, you know, feeling that the league, you know, the Kaepernick protest really crossed a line that a lot of people are like, that's it, I can't stand it. And it couples with all these other factors, such as oversaturation of the games. The idea that, I was thinking about this, Craig, do you know when they play games in London, again, which are the NFL, you know, taking away a game from an American audience to try to develop an audience over in the UK, there are six games going on in one weekend. You can watch that game at, you know, the Thursday night game, the early morning London game, the 1 p.m. game, the 4 p.m. game, the Sunday night game, and the Monday night game. I love football, Greg. I'm not watching six games. People don't have the time to do that. They don't have the attention span to do that. And let's face it, not all these games are always going to be that great. So I think the NFL needs to stop and rethink things, and I think it would be very wise for them to be careful about antagonizing fans by injecting politics and controversial issues into the do what is supposed to be an escapist diversion from the problems.
No, I completely agree. And I think it's also the product. I mean, I get the fact that they want to protect players, but now the fact that you can't hit the quarterback below the waist, you can't hit him in the head, you can't even touch him in the head, you can't drive him into the ground, you can't hit him with your head lowered. I mean, basically, you can give him a big hug, and that's about it. And then some of these other things that are going on that people make it sound like it's the no fun league, like the guy from the Redskins, who we both dislike, the Redskins, that is. The cornerback made an interception this week, the defensive back, and he did a fake bow and arrow, and he's getting fined for that, and he got flagged for it on the field because apparently you can't mimic a weapon. So, you know.
Come on. You know, if he's allowed to do that, Greg, you're going to see an increasing rate of drive-by archery.
Very nicely done. All right. If that weren't crazy enough, let's move on to our actual crazy martini. And this is courtesy of Politico. A brewing professional rivalry between two of the biggest stars on Fox News turned openly hostile Wednesday as Sean Hannity and Megyn Kelly traded insults over their vastly divergent approaches to covering the 2016 presidential race. The unusually public exchange began when Kelly criticized Trump for refusing to conduct interviews in, quote, unsafe spaces, opting instead for the friendly confines of the Hannity show. Quote, Donald Trump, with all due respect to my friend at 10 o'clock, will go on Hannity and pretty much only Hannity and will not venture out to the unsafe spaces these days, which doesn't exactly expand the tent for either one of them, Kelly said during a Wednesday broadcast of The Kelly File. Hannity tweeted at Kelly soon afterwards, telling her to direct her ire at Hillary Clinton instead and adding, "Clearly you support her." Here's the actual tweet. "At Megyn Kelly, you should be mad at Hillary Clinton. Clearly you support her. And real Donald Trump did talk to you." Later challenged on social media to stand by your colleagues, Hannity took another swipe at Kelly, saying he would do so when they stand by me. Jim, election years are tumultuous. It's been an especially tumultuous year at Fox News with the whole Roger Ailes saga. There's going to be a lot of changes, I have a feeling, at Fox News, whether Hannity goes or Kelly goes or whatever happens with the slot Brit Hume is currently holding down. Usually Fox News stays pretty intact in an election season. Not the case this time at all.
Yeah, and they were the kings of cable news for a really long stretch. The ratings for all of them are fine, but you can just kind of tell that the tension in the hallways there just isn't, you know, it's almost palpable. You can almost see it coming across on the screen. I'm not saying this, citing any inside sources, Greg, because I don't know if you noticed, but since I started criticizing Trump, I was invited back to Greta. Not that bitter. Anyway, but it's really unusual to see one host really ripping into another host the way Hannity was. And I think Megyn Kelly has a fair gripe here. Now, based on this dispute, you know, the past dispute between Trump and Kelly, it's not all that surprising that Trump has chosen not to appear on Kelly's show. And the easiest way for Trump to kind of dispel that criticism is to do interviews beyond Hannity, perhaps on other networks, but with someone who's not considered such a friendly supporter as Sean Hannity is. And I think that would be the easiest way to dispel that. He really hasn't. He don't think he's done anything outside of Fox News for a couple of weeks now. Whether this is a Kellyanne Conway strategy or just Trump being more comfortable with a certain types of interviewers, look, the point Kelly's making is right. You can't, you already won over that audience. You've got that audience. You got to reach out to beyond that audience to expand it because you're behind. You got to win people over here, and it probably doesn't isn't going to help him very much. The other kind of nagging doubt there is like for Hannity to respond to that and say you're supporting Clinton. I mean, God, he's like a malfunctioning robot from Westworld these days. He just kind of you support Hillary. You support Hillary. That's his blanket response to anybody who criticizes him. And the easiest way Hannity could dispel the criticism that he's a lapdog is just hit Trump with some really hard question in one of these interviews. But, I won't hold my breath.
No, he's also said he doesn't really want to reconcile with Never Trump or people who don't like Donald Trump once this is over, regardless of how the election turns out. So that's healthy going forward. Jim, I know it's going to be an exciting day for you. I'm sure you're just anxious for the reemergence of Al Gore on the campaign trail as he is now being trotted out as a 68-year-old magic solution to winning back the millennial vote for Hillary Clinton. It's just an electrifying time.
I got the notice in my AOL account today, and I'm going to be opening up my Alta Vista search engine to get the best web browser to watch it live. I understand Soundgarden might be playing. And they're going to raise the roof, Greg. They are down with it. Demographic of our podcast, Greg, most people are like, that's perfectly fine. Just speaking normally. What's wrong?
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.